to welcome everybody in, and a happy Friday by the time this comes out, to the first ever Crunch Cast. That's right, brand new podcast focusing on the Syracuse Crunch, a little bit of Lightning, a little bit of Kalamazoo Wings here and there, brought to you by RawCharge.com. Before we even get the show started, I just want to acknowledge the fact that the Crunch community lost one of its own this week, a War Memorial staple. Every time you were in the building, even away games, you talk to people over in Blue Cross Arena, over in Binghamton, a staple no matter where the Crunch were playing. Jason Donatson unfortunately passed away this week. A great, fun-loving guy, buddy of mine, really embodied what it's like to be a Syracuse Crunch super fan. You think I'm a fan, you think Alex is a fan. This guy was insane, but in the best way possible. Drove us crazy at times, but still, awesome, awesome guy. It's just unfortunate. Thoughts and prayers to his family and friends. So, my name is Brandon Curtis. I have my good friend, staple over here at Raw Charge, Alex Ackerman, is with me. Alex, how you doing?
Good. How about you, Brandon?
Doing great. So, the Crunch start the season hot. They come into the regular season after a pretty impressive preseason as well. They come into the season and they start at home against Rochester. They head out to Rochester both days, completely dismantle them. I mean, every facet of the team was clicking, it seemed, at that point. Offense was there. Defense looked good, even though, you know, some of us are still reserved on how that's going to play out as the season goes on. We come into last weekend, and the Crunch...
Ouch.
Exactly, ouch. The Crunch used to host the Utica Comets. Some good things you can take away from the game, but also, you know, more bad than there was good. They end up dropping that one 5-4 at the War Memorial in front of, I believe it was a sold-out crowd, correct?
Yes, I think it was.
So, Alex, what was your takeaway from that game?
Well, first of all, it always kills me when things kind of fall apart in front of those sold-out crowds. And I know that Utica is always a big presence in the War Memorial whenever we play the Comets. Their fans come out. You can't deny that they will go and support their team in away barns. Their own arena usually sells out. So, you know, but it always kind of stings just a little bit more when you know your barn is packed with people and the team kind of seems to drop like they did on Friday night. I liked the fact that there was that kind of never say die attitude, which we saw a lot last weekend at Rochester. You know, the team kind of got down in the early beginnings of that Sunday game at Rochester and 2 weekends ago.
Right.
And they were able to pull themselves back up. And that was a big issue with the team in the last couple years, that they would get down by a goal or two and it just seemed insurmountable. You could see it on the ice. You could see it on the bench. And there'd be no coming back from it. So it was nice to see that the guys still showed spirit throughout, pretty much right up until the end of the game Friday night. But, you know, I don't think that the defense was as sharp as they needed to be. And we'll talk a little bit about that later on in the show. But I definitely think that that was an area of concern. It didn't seem like the forwards were playing that quick, sharp game that they had been playing the weekend before, where they're using their speed, they're moving the puck, and they're trying to make things happen. It seemed like they got hemmed in a lot throughout that Friday night game, and that was frustrating.
Isn't it something that it always seems like, no matter what Crunch team takes the ice, Utica comes into town, and it's like trying to climb the tallest mountain in the world. For whatever reason, the Comets just play good on the Crunch's ice. And, I mean, like you said, I spoke to Syracuse Crunch head coach Benoit Grew after the game, and he pretty much said everything that you just said. They didn't come out sharp. That first period really put them behind, sent them behind early in the game. But like you said, they were able to bounce back. And one thing that I think is going to help this team a lot is, you know, the defense and the goaltender are going to have off nights, but this team has plenty enough offense. As long as Tampa stays healthy and the guys down in Syracuse stay healthy, there's enough offense on this team that can bail the defense and the goaltending out on occasion.
Yes, I agree with that. As long as they're playing their game, everything will be fine. I don't actually think, I mean, losing time again this early in the season sucks. I feel terrible for him that, you know, he's had this injury, whatever it is. The team's being kind of secretive on that for some reason. But even though we've lost him, it doesn't feel like the end of the world at all, which I think last year that would have been a different story.
Right, absolutely. Offensively, the depth this year is much, much, much better. And no matter what anybody said in the past about Julian Brisbois, you have to commend him for what he did this offseason. He went out, and the Crunch is a pretty stacked lineup right now when you look at the forwards. I mean, defense, still some question marks, as we will talk about later in the show, but I don't think scoring goals is going to be a problem for this team whatsoever.
No, I don't think so either, which will be fun for the fans, especially because we've kind of been missing some of that. You know, our top scorer last season was Jeff Tambellini, who unfortunately isn't with the team anymore. But I know I was personally kind of surprised at the end of the season when I'm looking over the news releases that the AHL is giving out and that Jeff Tambellini was in the top of the league in points scored. And I'm sitting here going, really? Huh? Because it just didn't seem like we had that going the way that we should have last season. So having this much firepower, I love what Dumont is bringing. I love what Bornival is bringing. I think that Adam Ernie has been looking really good. And having guys like Joel Vermeen down here that wasn't exactly expected, all of that is going to really help us as we move further into this season.
Right, and a lot of these guys that have brought in that are well-established scorers, not only at the AHL level, but guys that have went up to the NHL and have been able to put the puck in the back of the net, guys like Auburn, New York native Jeremy Morin just got into his first game last Saturday, I believe it was. Wait until that kid gets going, man. He can flat out shoot the puck. And you got a guy like Mike Helmo that comes in from the Islanders organization. He's another one. Early in the season, he hasn't got his feet under him yet. But when he does, and if all these guys get clicking at the exact same time, this Crunch team could be dangerous.
Yeah, and I think we've had good luck with that. You know, there was that time, what was it, 2 years ago when Vladdy came back down, and we had an awesome December because it was just that one catalyst that kind of needed everybody to get going. And I think this year it is a little bit different because we have collected guys from a lot of different organizations. So it's probably going to take that unit a little bit of time to figure out the systems and really kind of get into the groove with the way the organization wants them to play together. But like you said, once they get that going, it's going to be really dangerous.
All right, we'll move into Saturday now. Obviously, the Crunch dropped that one Friday against Utica 5-4 on home ice. A lot of things to take out of that game Friday. I spoke to Luke Witkowski after the game, and I asked him, I said, you know, going into tomorrow's game against Wilkes-Barre on the road, always a decent team over there in Wilkes-Barre-Scranton. I asked him, you know, what do you take from this game to, you know, earn a better result tomorrow? And he simply said, you know, the guys in this locker room are good enough to win games, and they just need to put together a full 60 minutes. Kind of a hockey cliche there, but it's true. I mean, if Friday night, if they would have came out better in that first period, who knows what the result would have been. So they head into Saturday, going down to Wilkes-Barre-Scranton. I was at that game. Silent first period, not much going on either way. Heavy dump and chase game for Syracuse throughout the first 20 minutes of the game. Couldn't really get anything going. Played solid defensively, though, and kept Wilkes-Barre off the board. And then that second period hit, and man, was that ugly. Two shorthanded goals there, both scored by Kevin Porter. One off of sorry to throw you under the bus, Dylan, but Dylan Blue just off the breakout of their own zone. I don't know what happened there. He lost control of the puck. Porter came in alone. And both shorthanded goals were pretty much identical. Beat Wilcox high glove side both times. And that's just deflating.
Definitely. And I mean, on the other side, you know, I just heard Ben Grew was just on with Brent Axe through ESPN this evening. And he had a lot of compliments for our PK. Which is great that the penalty kill, they're like in the top 5% of the league right now. It's awesome that they're clicking so well. But part of me wonders, you know, that, what was there, 8 penalty kills Saturday night for the Crunch? That's a lot. And if you're looking at gaining any kind of momentum, having to continually kill off that many penalties is not going to give you that momentum.
Right. And it's piggybacks off of what Ben Grue and Luke Witkowski said after the game Friday night. That, you know, they had to come out and be better in that first period. Friday night might have been less than a minute in. I think it's Corey Conacher ends up taking a minor, and Utica gets on the board quick. Then you have this Saturday, or the following Saturday, my apologies, where they come out against Wilkes-Barre, and I'm not sure of the exact time, but early in the game again, I think it might have been, it was either Dumont or Condra, I want to say. One of them took a minor early in the game. Granted, Wilkes-Barre didn't score on that power play, but when you're putting yourself a man down that early, it's deflating. It's hard to come back from.
Definitely. And I think that, you know, and you know, it's a lot on your goaltender too, to have to continually deal with those man down situations. And, you know, we'll address some of that later on in the show, but I think that that's something to consider too. You know, I can't imagine as a goalie knowing that there's less of your team on the ice and knowing that you're probably going to have to face a lot in the next 2 minutes or 4 minutes or however long the time is for. And that's got to be, even if it's not so much a physical strain, maybe they don't get a lot of shots off, but it's still got to be a mental strain on them too.
Right, absolutely. And I think it's worth noting that Adam Wilcox looked absolutely fantastic Saturday night. He made a lot of great saves. And we'll talk about our thoughts on Christer Zgudlevsky's from Friday night. I know you have plenty to say on that particular topic. But Wilcox looked good Saturday. And, you know, final score ends up being a 3-1 loss for Syracuse. I think Corey Conacher was the one who got the lone tally for Syracuse. And how about Corey Conacher? You know, he goes overseas, ends up signing that deal with Tampa. One-way contract, although many speculated that he'd probably end up in Syracuse at some point. Mm-hmm. He comes down, he doesn't hang his head, and look at him. I mean, he's lighting it up. I think he's got a point in every game this season, if not pretty close.
It's been great having him back, and I got to say, I got to give credit to all three of Conacher, Vermeen, and Condra for coming down here and playing as hard as they have, because we've seen it time and time again in this city with all of the affiliations we've been a part of, where these guys get sent down, it's kind of unexpected, and they pout and they sit and they don't put a lot of effort in, and they just kind of coast in the hopes that someone will get hurt and they'll just get the automatic call up. And none of those guys have been playing like that at all. They've been playing like, we have to earn this back, which is exactly the mind frame that they should have going into this. So I got to give a lot of credit to those three, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I said when they all got sent down, I don't know how long this is going to last with these three guys here. And I still have an inkling that a guy like Eric Condra could possibly be on the move at some point rather soon. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but something's telling me that he's not in the future plans. I think that he's an asset that could be moved to try and shore up the Crunch blue line at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, they've came down and they've all looked good, and the Crunch really need to capitalize off this as long as they are here. They need to get as many points as they possibly can early in the season.
Absolutely. I know that, I think it was one of my good friends, Mike, who brought up, you know, 1 year, it was 2008, 2009, we missed the playoffs by a point. And last year we got burned by the crossover rule. And it just seems like that one of the things we've been missing in these last couple of seasons has been a really good start, where then if Tampa has injuries or if we have injuries towards the middle of the season, things fall apart a little bit, our standings position doesn't get hurt so much. And if they can pull that off this season, that could be a real boon coming up as we head down towards the home stretch later on.
Right, I couldn't agree more with you. They need every point that they can get. Like you said, we've seen it in the past. And we really do not want another year of no playoff hockey in Syracuse.
No, and you know, I don't really even count the last time we were in the playoffs as being in the playoffs, because we got swept.
Oh yeah.
And we ended the season so terribly. Yeah, that, yeah. You know,
blink your eyes, it was over.
Yeah, and it was just not a good, I mean, we basically fell backwards into those playoffs. If I remember, it was like Albany had to lose the game, but they had to lose in overtime or the shootout or some stupid thing where it was just so insane that that was how we ended up in the playoffs. And it just, I don't want another season like that.
Life of a dedicated Crunch fan.
Yeah.
Well, with all that being said, we're going to head into our rapid fire round. Basically, what's going to happen here is we have three trending topics in Crunchland. Each of us will get 2 minutes to speak our piece on the situation. We'll start with Alex. As we've been talking about here, defense came out first weekend, looked good. Offense helped to support them. This past weekend, both games really, defense just didn't look like they came to play. Early in the season, is this a cause for concern yet?
All right. So Gilmore Girls training, don't fail me now. Here we go. One of the biggest things that I've been concerned about with the blue line for really about probably half a season, then going into this season now, is honestly Luke Wachowski's game. And I know that to some that's going to sound kind of rough, but I think that Luke has gotten a really mixed message from the Lightning and where he belongs in the organization. The Lightning kind of keep drafting and keep employing these defensive defensemen who are these stay-at-home guys who should be able to play that game. But then when they get called up, the first thing that they say to Luke is, okay, who are you going to fight tonight? And so sometimes I think that that kind of confusion has been hurting our top pairing a little bit. I know that there has been some frustrations towards him, towards some of the fans that I follow, because I think that he is caught between this idea that in Syracuse, he's on that top pairing. He's balancing out whoever is in town that's our offensive defenseman of the moment, whether it's Slater Cuckoo, whether it's Matt Taramina. I think he was paired with Dylan Blue just for a little bit. So he's kind of supposed to balance that out down here, but then he goes up there and they want the physical game. So I really would love to see him go back to that solid, stay-at-home example defenseman that our younger guys like Jake Dotchin can really, really benefit from seeing on that ice. I think that if we can get that kind of in order, that might help. But I also think that we need some additional new blood on that blue line. I don't think that we have enough depth there to make up for any injuries that might happen either up here or down there. And I think that it's going to get kind of frustrating, even just for options as far as changing up pairings down the road, should anything happen. 2 minutes. Yay.
Right. I mean, I completely agree with you. Luke Wachowski is a guy that I admittedly have given some flack to over the last couple of years. My issue isn't with Luke at the present moment. My issue is exactly the other point that you made. The depth just isn't there this year. I mean, kudos to Julian Brisbois for going out and, you know, stacking up on forwards and, you know, depth scoring and guys that can step up to Tampa Bay if need be and put the puck in the back of the net. But I'm not sure. Did they make any defensive moves this summer? I don't think so, other than Adam Comrie coming in, who is a guy who I believe was in the Flyers organization, spent most of his time in the ECHL last year, has a bomb of a shot. The guy that I wanted him to make, you know, I mean, I guess technically he made the opening night roster, but I wanted to see him get ice time quick. But yeah, that's just my problem is, besides Comrie, who else can they call up? I mean, Ben Thomas is all right. He's young. He played a couple games for Syracuse last year. But in my eyes, he's still an ECHL defenseman at best right now. You got a guy like Dylan Blugis, who is probably, other than Slater Cuckoo, at the top of the list for Tampa. I mean, one guy gets hurt up there. You're either losing Luke Wachowski or Dylan Blugis. Then what do? Okay, you call up Comrie. Say someone goes down on the blue line in Syracuse, then what do? Basically, what I'm getting at is a move's got to be made at some point, whether it's Eric Conger ends up getting moved or, you know, some deal up top that sends a couple defensive prospects our way. We need to shore up the blue line because right now the depth just isn't there. A minute 51. Look at that.
Yeah. And you're right. It was Adam Comrie was the only move they made for us, and that was just an AHL only contract. And he actually just got his call up. I'm not sure if do we have someone that's hurt.
Yes, do we actually know? Dominic Machin. He did not play. He didn't play Saturday night. I guess Ben Grew said that he was a little banged up. Nothing long term. They were hoping to get him back on his feet by the end of this week. So that's probably where Comrie comes in this weekend. Hopefully we get a look at him because he's a big guy. He's got a bomb of a shot. I think that he's somebody who, I mean, given a good look, he could be a big part of this team. Maybe not this year, but down the road at some point.
Definitely. And I think that, you know, like you said, I just don't see a lot of developmental opportunities right now on our blue line. You know, they've pretty much taken everybody who was ready. I mean, you know, I agree with you that Dylan Blugis is going to be one of those front runners for the next call up, but that's a little scary. Like if I was a Lightning fan, I wouldn't be comfortable with that at all.
No, I completely agree with you. Don't get us wrong. Dylan Blugis he's going to be a great player, I think.
Absolutely.
He's not going to light up the scoring sheet for you, but he is a guy who he can play both ways. He's able to move the puck. There was a steep fall off last year in my eyes for him and Jake Dotchin, and I'm really hoping that they can bounce back this year.
Yeah, I've liked what I've seen of Dotchin so far this year. I think that honestly, he's the one that looks the most improved in my eyes that we've been watching for a good couple of seasons, just in these first couple of games. He seems much more sure of himself. He seems like he's streamlined his body a little bit. He doesn't have some of that baby fat that he kind of had in the last couple of years. So I really think that he put in a lot of work over the summer and it's really showing, which is exciting. But I also don't think that he's near that threshold yet where he's ready for a call up.
Right. I've been clamoring for it for the last 2 years. Put Jake Dotchin on the power play, put him at the top of the left circle and let him shoot the puck off of a one timer. Cause I've seen the kid when he lets it go, he lets it go. He's got a bomb of a shot as well.
Mm-hmm. But, so do you want to kick off our potential fix for power play struggles then?
Oh, sure. Why not? Why not?
All right.
The power play. Seems to be a organizational issue over the last couple of years that needs to be addressed. Certainly. I already know what you're going to say. My analysis of the power play is much, much, much more simpler. And it comes in three words. I'm going to be that guy right now up in the stands. Shoot the puck. Mm-hmm. You get the puck on your tape, you have an open lane, shoot it. I mean, I've seen, like five games this season already, whether it's preseason, regular season, and this team gets the... I understand that they're a real talented bunch and that they can pass the puck, but I don't know how many times I've watched them pass up an opportunity and it ends up, you know, sailing wide of somebody's stick and they never even get a shot off. How many odd man rushes have I seen them go on already this year where they Tanner Richard opts to send a 10-foot high saucer pass up in the air that's not even close to anybody's tape. you get the puck, shoot it. I don't necessarily have the same issue that you have, and I'm sure that you're gonna let everybody know what your issue is. Like I said, simple. Just please, please, please shoot the puck.
Okay. Yeah. I think that shooting the puck is a problem on the power play. It doesn't seem like our talent has the same confidence in themselves when they're on the power play than when they're playing 5-on-5 or even 4-on-5. It seems like our penalty kill talent can have more confidence in their ability to take it down to the other end and get something done down there and waste some minutes than our talent does on the power play. I'm concerned about the fact that a couple times this year so far, we have seen five forwards on the power play. That scares the living daylights out of me because I don't think we have, at least not that I've seen yet, and there might be a hidden gem in there somewhere, a forward who is really defensively sound as well, and that's going to keep that puck in that zone so that we have the chance to shoot it and we have the chance to score. I think that it terrifies me when we end up with five forwards out there, and I wish that they would stop it because they're giving me heart attacks. But for the last couple of seasons, I've really been advocating going back to the defenseman quarterback, four forwards, or even three forwards and one defenseman and one defensive quarterback who can really get it done. And maybe Jake Dotchin is that guy, you know, but I really think that the years that our power play was good, I always think back to the Andy Delmore years, back when we were with Columbus. He was our go-to power play quarterback. He knew what he was doing. He had the confidence. He knew where to shoot from. And our power play was phenomenal that year. And it just seems like that most of the years where I remember we've had a good power play, it's because we had that defenseman quarterback who was able to do well. Clay Wilson was also eventually one of those guys. It took him a little while, but he turned into it too. So I'm really missing that defensive quarterback right now.
I think the closest that we have to a defensive quarterback is a guy who just got swapped out for Slater Cuckoo and is now in Tampa Bay eating popcorn in the press box, Matt Terramina.
Yeah, and
he'll be back soon, though, I'm sure. The whole Slater Cuckoo issue is one that we'll save for a rainy day. But we definitely missed Matt Terramina in Syracuse. In my opinion, he's a different kind of. He's a different kind of puck mover than Slater Cuckoo is. And the majority of people are going to disagree with me. But if I have to pick between Slater Cuckoo or Matt Terramina quarterbacking my power play, I want Matt Terramina 10 days out of 10 days. That's just me. Now, the one that we've all been waiting for, Alex. I can't wait to hear this one. So as we know, Friday night, last Friday, Christers Godlevskis comes in and, you know, gets beat up by Utica. I talked to Benoit Grue after the game. He said that he doesn't place the blame on Christers. He said that maybe he wants one of those back and that the defense just wasn't good in front of him. But for some people, most people actually that I've spoke to, they completely disagree. And it seems like for the last couple of years, man, people have been coming after Christers' head. It seems like not too long ago, this was, you know, he just came off of that game in the Olympics where, you know, he led, almost took Latvia to a win over Team Canada. And overnight, it seems like people turned their back on him. And apparently, they don't think Christers is the goaltender of the future. Well, Alex, what's your take? We want to know.
All right, I want you to know that I'm literally pacing right now because this subject gets me so upset. Okay, so the thing that drives me insane about this is that I feel like people who point to Christers and whatever always look at, well, last season his numbers were this. Last season this was his save percentage. Last season this was his record. But what frustrates me to no end about that kind of thinking is that, in my opinion, a goaltender's numbers and record reflect the entire team and not just how well he's able to do. If you look at, you know, I have a very limited perspective on hockey teams in general. I follow the Crunch. I pay attention to the Lightning. But for 13 years, the Crunch has been my team. But when I look at goaltenders in Crunch history who we remember as being good, we look at Seti, we look at Carl Gehring, we look at J.F. LeBay, we look at those guys who were talented, but they also had an incredible team in front of them. And who knows what would have happened had they not had that incredible team in front of them. And for people to continually point back to numbers and records when they're judging the goalies on this team, I think that that's just an unfair marker to go with. I don't buy into the idea that he's just a high-performance goalie. I know there have been both prospects said it first, and then a certain beat writer echoed it a couple days later that, you know, he can do really well on the international stage, but then once he gets into a Wednesday night at Binghamton, he flops. I don't buy that because hockey is not a one-player effort. It's the whole team. And everyone will admit that the team we had last year did not live up to expectations, was not full stocked at any point during the season, and at one point in time was robbing Peter to pay Paul and having Witkowski and Daniel Walcott play forward. What is your goaltender supposed to do with that? So I'm frustrated by this whole thing, and I've gone over my time, so now I will let you talk.
Well, no, I agree with you. I think Christers is a fantastic goaltender. I think just like any other goaltender, you're going to have off nights. And for whatever reason, it seems like when any other goalie has that off night, it's no big deal, you know. But when it's Christers, mm-hmm. it's blown out of proportion. Mm-hmm. Here's what I think. My opinion, truthfully, doesn't matter. What does the goaltending situation look like by the deadline? If it was my choice, I think one of two things would happen. I think either put full stock in Christers, knowing that Ben Bishop's probably not going to be with the Lightning after this year, and try and groom him for a full-time backup position behind Andrei Vasilevsky, or you let him go. I mean, move him somewhere where he's going to get the fair chance to, you know, be the goaltender that he can be. By the deadline, I think that Tampa knows that Christers isn't in their future plans at this point. And I think you're slowly going to start seeing, you know, him get taken out of the net on a consistent basis. And I think you're going to see Adam Wilcox, by the deadline, be the team's number one goalie. And that's nothing against Adam Wilcox. I think Adam's a tremendous goaltender. Mm-hmm. I think that he's a guy that is projected too low, in my opinion. I think the ceiling that most people are calling for on Wilcox is a full-time backup goalie in the NHL at some point. I think this kid is good enough to someday be a starter in the NHL, and I think the same thing for Christers. But by the time the deadline rolls around, I'd be pretty shocked if Adam Wilcox wasn't the Crunch's number one goaltender. And, I mean, it's unfortunate for Christers. Hopefully something works out for him, because he's a guy that he deserves to play. He deserves, you know, to get a shot at the NHL at some point. He's more than earned it at this point, in my opinion. Numbers aren't everything, folks, as Alex said. Yeah.
I agree. And I think that your point, he does deserve to play. And, you know, I think that it's hard with any goaltender. We all know that the more rusty they get, the harder it is sometimes for them to bounce back. And especially, I think, when you're younger, you don't have that hardened, grizzled, you know, this is the way the game is going to go, but I have to be ready. When it gets into your head. And I do think that it would be difficult for him to play backup at this point in his career, even if it was in the NHL. And so I think that if they're really keeping what's best for him in mind, I don't think that's the direction that his career should go in.
Oh, I'm right there with you. Only time will tell, though. So yeah. As we've spoke on for the majority of this here show, last week was not what the Crunch and their fans had in mind. They head into a big weekend. It's their first 3-3 of the season. Tomorrow night, they're in Binghamton for the first time of the year. Binghamton comes in. They have two wins, one regulation loss, and one loss in the shootout. A team that, in my estimation, is going to be much improved from last year. This is last year, Matt O'Connor came in. He was a rookie goaltender for them. He's coming into his sophomore year now with the B-Sens, and I think he has a bright future in the league. And they went out and they got somebody like Mike Blunden.
Mm-hmm.
That is wearing the A over there for them, and I think that he is somebody who the Crunch are going to miss a lot, or maybe I'm just going to miss a lot, I'm not sure.
No, I think everybody will.
But yeah, big game tomorrow night at Bingo. Saturday night they come back home, they host the Providence Bruins. When's the last time we've seen Providence? Did we see them last year?
It's so funny that you say that, because I actually just brought up the AHL site to look that up myself, because I feel like we have not played them in a very long time. Because I have some friends that are Boston Bruins fans, and they always told me, you know, let me know when the farm team comes into town because we'll want to go see a game. And I was never able to let them know because it never seemed like we played them.
Right. Well, that's what I was thinking. But yeah, the baby Bruins come into town. They're at the bottom of the Atlantic Division right now. I know Boston up top is struggling. The injury bug has hit them early on in the season. And both of Providence's goaltenders, the one guy, his name escapes me at the moment, but the other's Malcolm Subban. They're both up in Boston, so it looks like Providence is coming into the weekend, assuming that nobody gets reassigned back down there. Looks like they're coming into the weekend with a couple of possible ECHL goaltenders, which could bode well for the stacked Crunch offense. We'll see what happens there. Sunday, the Crunch, and on the back end of their 3-3, they're heading back down to Wilkes-Barre, trying to put together a much better performance than they did last Saturday. Wilkes-Barre's got a good team. I think a lot of people thought that after last year, Pittsburgh winning the Cup, I think a lot of people thought that Wilkes-Barre was going to get cleaned. A lot of guys were going to get sent out for whatever reason. But they're a good team. They just knocked off the undefeated Albany Devils last night. I think they came into the game with a 5-0 record. And Wilkes-Barre put an end to it. They played well against them. So, you know, Crunch have a tough weekend ahead of them, as all 3-3s are. Basically, hopefully we make it out of it with 6 points.
Yeah, it looks like the last time we played Providence was in 2013-14. I think we had just one game there and one game here against them.
Yeah, I remember the Crunch playing them once because I think it was Malcolm Subban's rookie year.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, the Subbans always just interest me. So I try and keep tabs on them guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just checking out Wilkes-Barre's schedule. I was just curious to see if they had a 3-3 this weekend too. And somehow, I don't think that they do not. They only play Saturday and Sunday this week. So Syracuse is going to have that working against them too.
Right. And like I said, Wilkes-Barre's good. They got a good team over there. All things are clicking early for them. And maybe we should stay off the power play in that game Sunday, huh? Let's just play 5-on-5.
I like that idea. Try to stay out of the box, too, while you're at it. Because, man, let's this 8-penalty-a-night thing, let's not do that anymore.
But something to look forward to for Crunch fans, Providence coming into town. There's a guy on that roster by the name of Zach Rinaldo. I'm sure you all remember him. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that Syracuse has a guy by the name of Pierre-Luc Letourneau-Leblanc. So we could have a nice heavyweight showdown on our hands Saturday. So by all means, the Crunch aren't paying me, but you're going to want to get your tickets for this Saturday. Should be a fun game.
Yeah, definitely. And I know the team just released some of their Halloween information. This is going to be their Halloween celebration Saturday night. The kids can come in costume. There's going to be a costume party. And then they've also released that there's going to be a post-game skate after the game. And as long as you just have, it's totally free. It doesn't cost anything. It's just you just have to sign a waiver to be allowed to be on the ice, and you have to bring your own skates. So, you know, I participated. It was actually kind of cool. I did the post-game skate last year for Mike Angelides's, Change for Change. Sorry, I'm still a little emotional over this whole thing. And I got to admit, you know, it was extremely cool, cooler than I thought it was going to be to go out onto that ice surface. It was something that I've only been on once before when my church choir sang God Bless America before a game a couple years ago. But that wasn't in skates. I was just standing on that awful carpet that they put out there so you don't kill yourself. And I got to admit, it was very, very cool skating out onto that ice surface and seeing it from that perspective. And, you know, I am definitely glad that that was something I experienced. So if you haven't done a post-game skate before and you have the skates, or if you have time to go out and get them, I know that they're kind of an expensive investment. I invested in a pair last year just for that purpose. So I know it's expensive, but if you have that opportunity, as a hockey fan, as a Crunch fan, it is very, very, very cool to go out there on that ice.
Well, there you have it, folks. Even more incentive to come out Saturday night and watch the Syracuse Crunch host the Providence Bruins. Now, the last segment of our show today, we're going to have a little fun here, play a little guessing game. We're going to project the team's MVP by the end of the season, the leading scorer, and the D-man of the year. So let's play fortune teller, Alex. It's the end of the season, hopefully a long run into the Calder Cup playoffs. Who do you peg as the team's MVP?
I would absolutely love to say that it would be a guy like Matthew Pekka, who I think could come into his own this season. But I actually think I'm going to go with Corey Conacher. I think that there is a little bit of a logjam in front of him right now, and that even if he isn't here for the whole season, I could see him making a couple trips back and forth maybe. And I think that with the effort he puts into his game and the way that he has been playing and the way that I know he can play, he puts his heart out there every single game.
For sure.
So I'm going to take a little bit of a gamble on him being here more often than not, and I'm going to go with Corey Conacher.
Right, and he was actually, when I was putting together my notes this afternoon, he was the guy that first popped into my head. But like you, I thought to myself, how long can this last? So I kind of figured at some point he's going to spend a good chunk of the season in Tampa. We all know that the organization, for whatever reason, never avoids the injury bug. So I decided to go with the former captain of the St. John's Ice Caps, Gabriel Dumont, who has came in, and I said as soon as they signed him, I said that, go back and check it out on rawcharge.com, cheap plug. Go back and check it out. I said that Gabriel Dumont is going to be a big, big piece of this team this year. And he's a guy who, he does it all. He's a leader, mm-hmm. like I said, former captain of the St. John's Ice Caps last year. He's already, you know, him and Michael Bournival. How about those two together? He's putting up points early in the season. He's a guy that in the locker room, people respect. People are going to listen to him. I just think that, I hate to make the comparison, Alex, but his player type reminds me a lot of a guy like Mike Angelides. I mean, he's a Mike Angelides type of player with a bit of a better scoring touch, and I just think that it'd be wise for Tampa to try and keep this guy around for a long time in this organization because he's a talented guy. I've spoke to him a couple times. He's an awesome guy to talk to, so I'm going with Gabriel Dumont for the team's MVP.
Mm-hmm. They've definitely, the two of them have been the most fun to watch out there for sure so far this year.
Well, we're going to hop over to the leading scorer. It's the end of the season, Alex. Who do you think scores the most points for the Syracuse Crunch?
Well, you know, I got to admit, I hate to, I kind of, you know, got a little preview of what you were planning on. And I kind of think I'm going to steal your thunder a little bit. And I'm going to go with Adam Ernie. I think that he is going to have a bounce back year. He got injured last year. He never quite seemed to be the same after he came back from it. But I think that it's clear that he's fully healed now. He's fully back. And he really wants to prove that he should be one of those that are next in line for that call up. And I think he's going to work his butt off in order to prove that.
Right. I completely agree, obviously.
Sorry.
No, I mean, Adam came in last year, a highly touted prospect out of juniors, came in, got injured pretty early in the season, and like you said, he was never really the same for the rest of last year. He's a guy that you love to watch. He doesn't do a lot of the pretty things, but he's not afraid to park himself in front of the net and score those dirty goals, and I think that's something that the Crunch have been lacking for a couple years now, mm-hmm. truthfully. Especially with the absence of Ty McGinn now, that net front presence is going to rely a lot on a guy like Adam Ernie. And I just, like you said, I think that, you know, he's a guy that's going to end up being a 20-25 goal scorer in the NHL at some point. He's a good power forward. I really don't know what it is. There's a lot of other guys that could easily end the year being the leading scorer, but my gut just tells me Adam Ernie for some reason. And hopefully for him, you know, hopefully he does it. He's a kid that definitely deserves it.
Yeah. Yep, he's definitely hungry. And I think that more than anything, might end up being the difference maker.
We will end it off with the D-man of the year. Who's the blue liner of the year for you, Alex?
I think I'm going to go with Daniel Walcott. I like what I've seen in him the past couple of years. For those of you who know about my summer adventures, I have been going up to SETI's charity tournament in Quebec City for the last two summers. And Walcott has been one of the guys that has been consistently there as well. And so I've kind of gotten to see him before the season actually starts in August, playing a little bit of tournament hockey. And even in the summertime, last summer, he was someone who really impressed me with how ready it seemed like he was to go for the season. And this past summer, I saw the same thing. You know, I love that he was willing to be so flexible last season with how many times he had to play forward. And I know he actually ended up scoring his only goals of the season while he was playing forward. So I think that he really has the potential to become more of a leader out there this year. I think that he has that ability to kind of go in both directions. He can be a solid D-man, but he can also have a little bit of a scoring touch if he's in the position to do so. So I'm going to go with Walcott this year.
And what a great personality that kid has, too. He's a fun guy to watch. You watch him on the ice, always has a smile on his face, even when he's in the other team's face, which he does quite often. But yeah, I'm going to go with Jake Dotchin. I've praised this kid for years and years. I watched him play when he was with the Attack and juniors, and he's just a fun kid to watch. He reminds me a lot of like a hitting wise. He reminds me a lot of like a Radko Gudas type of guy. A lot of snarl. Yeah, he's always one of the first ones there. If need be, if somebody's taking a run at somebody, he's there. And like I said earlier, the kid has a shot, and I wish somebody would let him know that, because he should be easily scoring, you know, 10 goals a year at least. I mean, you watch him let a shot go from on a one-timer, and it's a rocket. I mean, if he could get the shot a little bit more accurate and maybe not leave so many marks on the glass behind the cage, that'd be nice. But he's just a fun kid to watch, and a lot of people have Blue just head and shoulders ahead of him as far as the depth chart goes. And I've just always been an advocate for Jake Dotch. And I think that somebody needs to give this kid a shot at some point. And hopefully it happens this year. This is a real prover year for him. I think this is the last year of his ELC. I think it is for Blue just as well.
That sounds right. Yeah,
I believe so. So, I mean, go out there and prove it this year, Jake. Go out there and make people notice you more than they already have. And hopefully we see you back in a Crunch uniform next season.
Yeah, definitely. And his family's awesome, too. I know I have a couple of his family that follows me on Twitter and on Instagram. And they seem like a very fun group, very tight-knit. And it's always nice, like I know Slater Cuckoo's family is usually around quite a bit. It's kind of nice when we get to know their families and have that support sort of be more so than just the fans here. You kind of feel like you have these little pockets of Crunch fans all over the place because of the families that kind of get involved in all of this. So that's kind of fun too with him.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. It's great. This group of, even when we haven't been great the last 2 years, this group is just awesome personalities all over the place. And you can actually tell that they like being in Syracuse, and you know, they're proud to pull that sweater on every night. And it's awesome to see. It's very nice to see, especially considering what we've seen with past affiliation. So kudos to these guys, and kudos to the Tampa Bay Lightning for, you know, pushing Syracuse as a place that players want to be.
I think that this was a lot of fun, and I'm really hoping that once we figure out a way to post it, that this is going to become a weekly thing.
So anyway, to sign off here for my partner over here, Alex Ackerman, I'm Brandon Curtis. Thank you so much for tuning in to the first ever Crunchcast, brought to you by RawCharge.com, and hopefully we can make this a weekly thing. We're looking forward to it.
Yes, definitely. Thank you, everybody.